Welcome to Rhode Island Avenue Radio, where we'll talk about news, education, and opportunities for small businesses on the Rhode Island Avenue Main Street and in Washington, D.C. I'm Michelle Yancey.
And I'm Kyle Todd. Welcome to Rhode Island Avenue Radio. Good morning, and welcome to another episode of Rhode Island Avenue Radio. It's just me today, well, me and Rodney. Hey, Rodney. Rodney, I always catch him by surprise.
Good morning, Kyle. How are you?
Good morning. Michelle is out today, let's get right to it. First of all, I want to give a big thank you to our sponsors, the Department of Small and Local Business Development and the Department of Housing and Community Development. It is their grant dollars that help us produce this show, as well as many of the opportunities and programs that we have for small businesses and our promotional activities in the Rhode Island Avenue Main Street corridor. So big thank you to those sponsors. Some quick announcements. Porch Fest is just around the corner. By the time you're hearing this, it will be Tuesday, April something or other. The Tuesday before April 15th, that's all I know. Porch Fest is Saturday, April 15th from 2 to 6 p.m. Various locations along Rhode Island Avenue Northeast. I know that we're going to have a main stage at 1301 Rhode Island Avenue. We will have other stages at Rhode Island Row in front of Carolina Kitchen, at the Public Option at 1601 Rhode Island Avenue, and, of course, at Zeke's Coffee, 2300 Rhode Island Avenue, as well as some residential porches throughout the neighborhood. You can check our website and our Facebook page, RIA Main ST, on Facebook, for a link to the map that just got loaded up yesterday. So check that out, and be sure and join us April 15th from 2 to 6 p.m. Our third annual meeting, wow, 3 years of annual meetings. Third annual meeting will be Wednesday, May 10th from 7 to 9 p.m. This year we're going to be hosting it, thanks to Art Enables. We'll be hosting it at Art Enables. And that is just down the road from Zeke's Coffee, conveniently. So join us on May 10th from 7 to 9 p.m. That's our opportunity to talk about all the things we've accomplished over the last year and give you a little bit of a snapshot of what we're working for and towards in 2017. And you can check out the rest of our events that we've got lined up, our Summer Arts Festival, our Fall Festival, and the Procrastinators Holiday Market, on our events page on our website, riamainstreet.org. Okay, I think that's going to cover our announcements for the day. Let's get right to our guest. First thing this morning, we have got two of my favorite people from the Department of Small and Local Business Development, Lauren Atkins and Christina Amoruso. Welcome, Lauren and Christina.
Thank you.
Good morning, good morning.
Thank you.
Christine and Lauren are, let's get your official titles. Lauren, what is your official title at Department of Small and Local Business Development?
Well, I have the best job in the world. I'm lucky enough to be the manager of neighborhood revitalization for the Department of Small and Local Business Development.
Great.
And I also have the best job, and I am the DC Main Street's coordinator.
So listeners, you can see why these two folks are very important to me, because they are for all intents and purposes my boss at the Department of Small and Local Business Development, and love them for all of their assistance and their help that they provide us as a Main Street program. And neighborhood revitalization is the overarching program that encompasses DC Main Streets. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Great, great, great. Okay, so looking at the DSLBD website under neighborhood revitalization, there are two or three different programs. There's, of course, DC Main Streets, there's Clean Teams, and there's Business Improvement Districts. And, we talked a lot about the different Main Streets in DC. What is the difference between a business improvement district and a Main Street?
Well, they're both commercial revitalization tools. So they are practices, systems, ways to ensure that a business district becomes more successful. With a business improvement district, they do that by attaching an extra assessment to the property taxes that all the property tax owners, all the property owners make with their property taxes. And then that money is channeled to a nonprofit organization that works on commercial revitalization activities. For a Main Street program, they are all volunteer-driven, funded with donations. A big chunk of those donations, as you mentioned, do come from the D.C. government, but we're extraordinarily proud of all the fundraising work that our Main Street programs do and think that Rhode Island Avenue Main Street's a perfect example of all the good stuff that can happen. And when you see the community getting involved as donors and volunteers, then you see all kinds of things blossom, like Zeke's Coffee and Porch Fest and all those good things. The Main Street programs follow a model that focuses more on helping the businesses and doing that through our four-point Main Street approach. Business improvement districts focus more on helping the property owners and doing that through management of the public space.
So both of those programs are managed by nonprofits, but coordinated through DSLBD. Would that be accurate?
Sure. We take on a different role with each one. Because business improvement districts are a self-taxing district, our role there is to be a little bit of a watchdog for the creation of new business improvement districts and the renewal every 5 years. So we have a legislated obligation to ensure that the new bids have met the threshold for becoming a bid, which is to have a majority of the property owners, both in number and in assessed value, signing off on creating the bid. And then with Main Streets, I'll let Christina talk more about all the good things that we do with the oversight for Main Streets.
Sure. Well, Main Streets is a little different. And as Lauren stated, they're volunteer run. The only person who's not a volunteer is the executive director. And they focus on helping the neighborhood thrive by helping the small and local businesses located within it. So most of the assistance goes directly or indirectly to the business owners. How do we help them reposition their operations, or how do we help them do better? And how do we help the neighborhood do better by offering services that neighborhood residents or visitors can take advantage of? This could be retail, restaurants, whatever, whatever services there are. How do we make the neighborhood more attractive? How do we make it cleaner and safer, so that we can all enjoy being part of these neighborhoods? And also, how do we make all of this happen? There's an organizational framework. Funds that come through DSLBD-DC Main Streets definitely help, but each program ends up raising a substantial amount of money, and this is why it's so important for stakeholders to be part of this process, to believe in it, and to donate, whether in kind or financially. So this is kind of work. I'd like to just say that what makes Main Street unique is that it's incremental. We start small and we build up. Rome wasn't built in a day, and definitely DC Main Streets are not either. We are also bottom-up kind of programs. So stakeholders, all of you, all of us matter in this process. And we all have a say on how we want to make things happen, how we want these changes to take place. I think this is extremely important. We also like to think that we work together as a family to make things happen. And I really like to use the word family, because it takes a village to make things happen. And there are disagreements because we all have a different view. But in the end, what is most important is that we have the district, the neighborhood. That is the most important part, that we want it to thrive. And in the end, we all work in different ways to make this happen.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the neighborhood being safer and cleaner. And that makes me think, of course, to the clean teams. Rhode Island Avenue Main Street has a clean team that we work with, and there are clean teams positioned all over the district. And I think that the clean team is another project that's managed by DSLBD, and it's one of the, I think, one of the programs that has had the most rapid visible impact, particularly for our Main Street. When we first got started, the thing that people noticed the most right away was the clean team getting out there and simply picking up the trash. I mean, we had been doing that as a volunteer organization, but once we had the clean team that could do it on a daily basis, wow, that made a huge impact. Can you talk a little bit about other aspects of the clean team that are so important to emerging neighborhoods?
Sure, because they are designed, their primary objective is to help those business districts, not residential neighborhoods, but business districts that are in decline. And so the business owners are struggling in some way. What's something that government can do to help those businesses? So helping them with sweeping their sidewalks is, as you said, a huge thing. But there are a couple of other missions and objectives attached to that program that make it such a beloved program. It also provides jobs for D.C. residents. There are currently about 90 people working on the clean teams, and many of them are justice exposed, returning citizens, people who may have been incarcerated. So it's a great job opportunity for people who may be facing those ban the box issues. And then the other piece that makes it such a great jobs program is that the jobs, the crew are all paid living wages. So as of right now, that's $13.95.
Yeah, and I know at least the company that we contract with for our clean team, you know, they have not only, you know, this job that pays a living wage, but they also have training that they work with the team members on, whether it's, you know, landscaping or, you know, maintenance of equipment, things like that. It's the team members are learning skills that they might not have known before.
Absolutely. And they're very important skills, like getting a driver's license or getting a identification card if you don't know how to drive, setting up bank accounts, setting up, making sure that your wages are, you know, being paid the correct way, a lot of those good life skills, mm-hmm, kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, all of the job skills, how to provide great customer service, which, coming from a family with a retail background, I think customer service is the hallmark of every field, but not every field recognizes that. So we really, the guys are extraordinary, and gals, there's a couple of women there too, who really are beloved by the businesses and the customers they run into because they get to know them.
Yeah, and they're great eyes on the street. They're, mm-hmm, you know, they're folks that people can ask for directions, or, you know, do you know where I can find a coffee shop nearby, et cetera. So there's so many good benefits for those folks, and from having them on our corridors. And you both have been involved with Main Streets in general for many years. I mean, Lauren, I believe you were at the National Main Streets program. Christina, you were a Main Street manager yourself before joining DC Main Streets. How have you each seen Main Streets evolve over the years? What do you think have been some of the biggest growth areas for Main Streets in general?
Oh, that's a great one. So I started out as a Main Street director in Arkansas in the shadow of Walmart in the mid-1980s, and saw the impact that these large stores were having on the mom-and-pop shops, and grew up with it, and then came back and was able to start my career. That was my first job out of college. And in those days, we were trying to make a huge pitch for why anybody should even care about these downtown districts or wanting to move back into old buildings. Or the number of times, and as a new or a current Main Street director, if you can imagine this conversation today, you'll just laugh. But I had this real conversation with board members from our program who wanted to know why we shouldn't just bulldoze down the downtown and have Walmart build a big store in the downtown, because that was the best they could visualize. Our program took a huge bump the year a couple of the board members had a business opportunity to take a business trip to New Orleans, and they came back to see, oh, we actually could be doing cool things in this neighborhood.
Right, right.
Yeah. So I think I see that change, that people now recognize that commercial districts can be wonderful places with mom and pop shops.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, thank you for mentioning the whole, you know, recovering from the big box stores, because that's mm-hmm. that's something that I certainly see, you know, for our corridor, that for so long Rhode Island Avenue was, you know, the corridor that you drove through on your way out to the malls in the suburbs of, you know, PG County or something like that. And, you know, we're trying really, really hard to recapture the idea of shopping and enjoying the local businesses here on the corridor. So instead of driving through Rhode Island Avenue, you go to Rhode Island Avenue as a destination. And Christina, you were in upstate New York, is that right?
No, actually, I was in Boonton, which is located in Morris County, New Jersey. One thing that I think has changed, and I think it's a wonderful change, is that we don't see the projects that we do in silos. When I started, you did a promotion for promotion's sake, and you rehab buildings because you wanted buildings to look prettier, which was nice. The difference now, though, is that everything is under the umbrella of economic vitality, economic revitalization. Economic revitalization is a festival because it brings feet to the street, potential new customers. Design, whether you're rehabbing a building or putting a sign or just putting flowers on planters, is another way to revitalize the neighborhood. So instead of seeing all that we do in silos and not there being a clear connection, the clear connection is economic revitalization. Everything that we do is to help the corridor thrive. And so there is this fine line, that there is this thread that connects everything. And I think it's works a lot better this way.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, in again, thank you for bringing that up. This has been an evolution from the National Main Street standpoint, to go from the four-point approach, as you mentioned, the four silos, to one overarching, I'm going to use the wrong word here, but an overarching kind of attack on your neighborhood, yeah, of you know, yeah, we're doing Porch Fest, but we're not just doing Porch Fest because we want to have live music on Rhode Island Avenue. That's just a bonus. We're doing Porch Fest because we know that live music will help bring customers and warm bodies to our community, that will learn more about our businesses and shop there and eat there and love the neighborhood and want to stay.
I'll give you an example. Many moons ago, when I started as an executive director, I was tasked with starting a farmer's market. The farmer's market was close enough to the downtown that you could walk to it, but today, we would create a farmer's market with the idea that it brings feet to the downtown, that it's an added bonus to all the activity that is already taking place in downtown and will help the economic revitalization of downtown. When we started it, that was the secondary thought. The primary thought was we just wanted a farmer's market and we wanted to bring fresh and healthy foods to the town on a weekly basis, which is a very, very good idea. But I do think that the evolution of tying it all together, of making economic vitality our reason for being, has made us much stronger. And that's the reason why which we are much more successful today.
Yeah, yeah. And the success that you're mentioning, I've mentioned it, the study that was done a couple of years ago for Barracks Row and 8th Street. I've mentioned that a couple of times on previous episodes, but you know, that was comparing the impact of citywide investment in Main Street areas versus areas that were similar but not Main Street areas, and it showed a really impressive statistic.
It did, and that study was an extraordinary one, and because it's all a public study, we can mention the neighborhoods, and hopefully people will recognize them. It looked at the history over 20 years of the two commercial districts on the house side of Capitol Hill, so one being Barracks Row, which we all know today is a great American Awards-winning Main Street organization, and the second district being the commercial district that, when I lived on Capitol Hill, was the premier commercial district, where the Hawk and Dove is located and the Tune Inn is located, and Roland's Grocery Store. So it was absolutely the much better place to go compared to Barracks Row. And so when you look at these two districts that pretty much serve the same trade area, have the same customers, have very similar physical plant, the buildings look the same, and ask what is the big difference from 1 year, from over 20 years, and you say, well, the Main Street program happened on Barracks Row and didn't happen at 2nd in Pennsylvania, then it has to really give evidence that intervening in neighborhood economies and neighborhood market economies can have a positive impact on the residents and the customers and the business owners and the property owners.
Mm-hmm. And that was a significant impact too. It was, I'm not going to have the exact dollars and cents here, but it was, you know, roughly for every dollar the city invested, $3 was returned back to the city in the form of property taxes and corporate income taxes and all of that good stuff. So, you know, you extrapolate that over other Main Street areas in the District of Columbia, and that's a really nice benefit to the city.
And as your wonderful colleague loves to say, Martin Smith, who was with the program, Barracks Row, is the director for Barracks Row. And I just have to give a shout out. We are lucky to work with the most extraordinary Main Street directors on the planet. The 12 of you guys are just wonderful. And so he likes to say that that is a $1 that goes into a Main Street program that generates $3 of unrestricted funding that can then be used for, pothole repair in other neighborhoods, housing the homeless,
right,
feeding the needy, you know, whatever D.C. government wants to do with, because the measurement, it comes back in the form of property taxes and business taxes and sales taxes.
Yeah, yeah. So win-win for everybody. The neighborhood gets the surrounding neighborhood gets so many good businesses to enjoy, and the city prospers and the businesses prosper, and we all win.
If I may, I think what is important in this managed economy is that it is managed, and that's what made the Main Street program so successful. When you're a small business owner, you focus on your small business day and night because that's what you do. You don't necessarily have time you worry about trends, but do you really have the time to learn about how to make changes quickly to your business if need be, to think about what else is out there? How do you compare? How can you be better? And can you devote a significant amount of time to doing that? Well, no. But if you have a Main Street program, the Main Street program can help you do that. And that's where it becomes a managed program. They advertise, they market the neighborhood, the business district. They help you figure out how you should evolve as a retailer or as a business or whatever you do, how you should advertise. And so they help strengthen you because they know you, they see your strengths and your weaknesses, and they're on your side. They're working for you, which is the reason that Main Street, that businesses in Main Street programs are usually much more successful than the ones outside of them.
Right.
They
right.
have help.
Right.
All the time. You're their coach.
Well, and, you know, we can point them in the direction of resources. A, an entrepreneur, a business owner may go into business because he or she makes the best widget ever. And so they go into business to make that widget because they love making that widget, but they didn't necessarily go into business to be able to do the bookkeeping for that widget and or the marketing of that widget. And that's where Main Streets can come in and help coordinate or hook them up with you know, an alliance of someone that can help them with that and be a contractor for them, in addition to helping them put a nice shiny storefront together and helping them bring some businesses, customers to their business. Excuse me.
Absolutely.
And on both ends, Councilmember McDuffie made a great point in a meeting with DSLBD, the oversight hearing just recently, that one of the great things that Main Street programs do is to help the businesses that are having a hard time keeping up. So his example was a pizza parlor that is seeing their sales decline because they don't have an app in the store. And the property, the business owner, like you said, is the best pizza maker in the District of Columbia, but doesn't know how to run an app and doesn't care to learn how to run an app. And so the Main Street programs, by being in all 12 parts of the city, can provide those people who can come in and say, this is what you don't know. And it doesn't in any way mean that what you do know is any less, but let's get you some help so that you can figure out what you don't know and keep our long-term businesses around.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've said that from the beginning, that we wanted to make sure that our long-term businesses had all of the tools at their fingertips that they needed to be able to continue to compete in an evolving marketing economy. And, you know, neighborhoods change, new people move in, old people move away, or, you know, things happen, and you need to be able to reach the new market as it shows up on your doorstep. Mm-hmm. So, if you had to make a prediction on some small business trends, and this is my way of setting you up to talk about Made in DC, by the way. If you had to make a prediction on some small business trends for the DC area in the coming years, what would it look like?
Well, let's definitely start by talking about Made in DC. We are seeing a terrific, I can't even say renaissance, because I don't think this ever existed in Washington, D.C.'s retail landscape, of these maker businesses that are housed in great neighborhoods like Rhode Island Avenue. And you all were so strategic to take that on as your market position early on, that you wanted to go after businesses like Zeke's that were going to be using a big chunk of the space for making something, but then also bringing in a retail component. And I think that's excited all parts of the city to be able to buy your coffee and your honey and your soaps from people who are actually residents of the District of Columbia. So DSLBD has launched a Made in DC program that is available for businesses that are designed or fabricated or made or assembled in Washington, D.C. Other states have Made in Texas, and now we have a Made in DC program. So the benefits are the graphic imagery that you can now incorporate into your product placings, so that you can have labels and things that use the same graphic. And hopefully we're going to have even soon some ways for businesses to show that they are a home where you can purchase, as a retailer, you can purchase a lot of Made in DC goods here.
Nice.
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of pop-up shops, and had one last weekend at the Elm Street store over in Union Market.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was a great market. Yeah.
So businesses... how do they become part of the Made in DC family?
Visit the website, thisismadeindc.gov, and register as a business that is made in DC. There's a vetting process to ensure everything you put in your application was accurate, and then you are considered a Made in DC business with the rights to use the imagery as you want to.
So they can put the Made in DC logo on their labels, on their website, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Great, right. Great. And is there a fee to be involved in that?
There's not.
Just mm-hmm. just a valid, you're really making something in DC kind of thing.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So there's no reason for all of these local producers to not be taking advantage of that.
Right, because the idea of something being made in D.C. is we've been investing in the brand on the back end, and so people are excited to be purchasing goods and consuming and eating things. Gordy's pickles, I don't think you manufacture a pickle, but the pickles are cooked and fermented and made in D.C.
So was there a representation of Made in D.C. at South by Southwest?
There was, and it was one of the most well-attended and most exciting parts of South by Southwest, as I can absolutely say with no bias. But we had a really great display of many of the products, and people coming by were very excited because they had no idea that D.C. was a home for those kinds of things.
They just thought we were a swamp.
Exactly.
Just a swamp. Not true. A swamp with really good pickles and coffee.
Yes.
So any other good news coming down the pike from DSLBD?
Well, certainly we can talk about good news from DSLBD, but I'd also love to talk about an article that I read just last night. And so here's hoping it's a trend, but it kind of jives with what we see in the Main Street districts. And I'd love to see what you think of this. You mentioned that Main Streets have been fighting back against the big box stores and the category killers. But the big killer these days is online shopping. And, there's no shame, no blame, because we all do it. This article was saying that we've perhaps reached a plateau, and now there's an interest in returning to the stores. And I certainly see that with some of the national chains that I am a customer at right here in D.C. They've been investing more in the retail plant, in the physical store, and de-investing in the online experience.
That makes me very happy. Who doesn't love the convenience of having things delivered right to your door? Mm-hmm. But there are so many things. I'm a very tactile person. I can't just buy clothes online. I have to go see what they feel like. And I got to shop for clothes in person. And so many things like that. You want at least a showroom. And I know that I believe it was Warby Parker that started doing a showroom type situation here in D.C.
in a Main Street district
in Shaw Main Street. I would love to see more of that. I would love to see businesses, even locally owned businesses that are made and created here in D.C. Having an online presence as well as a brick and mortar location, because I think people love the experience. They love a good experience. And, there may be times when you want to just have a bag of dog food delivered to your front door. But at the same time, sometimes you want to go take your dog to the store and let them try out the different squeaky toys and pick out their own little chew bone. And so I think there's definitely a market for both locations.
Well, and one of the things that you all have shown here on Rhode Island Avenue, thinking about retail in the broader sense, which also includes restaurants, this day and age, you can pick up and have food delivered. You can pick it up and take it home, and it's as good a quality as what you would consume in the restaurant. And yet, people still love going to restaurants, and Nido is such a beautiful restaurant and such an extraordinary success. But rather, we could all just go and pick it up at Nido and take it home. Why do we want to enjoy it in the company of others? That socializing piece is so important. Maybe, like you said, not for everything. There may be some products that we never bring back into a retail landscape that used to be there. But I think we're seeing more of them slipping back in because people like shopping in stores.
Yep. I think for as much as people complain about everybody being tethered to their phones and disconnected from society, I think just the opposite is true as well. And I look at the Public Option as a great example. Simple little microbrew pub. All they do is really good beer, and not really much in the selection of food. They do bring in Republic Kolache and a couple of other small businesses for the food front, but it is packed there on Friday nights. from the neighborhood, from people who just want to go be with neighbors on a Friday evening after work. And I think that says a lot right there, because we all know each other via social media. Most of us met via social media here in the neighborhood on our little neighborhood listservs, things like that. But we still want to interact with people and businesses face to face. And I think seeing all the people that show up to all of the local businesses and see their neighbors, I think it does nothing more than solidify the community and make people glad to have those small businesses in the neighborhood.
And there's a terrific opportunity for the restaurants to then branch into more retail environments. So when you think of tons of great neighbors hanging out at Public Option, what might they want to purchase that they could actually see there? So let's work on getting some pop-up shops into Public Option so that they can experiment and try it out and see what works. And maybe nothing. Maybe when you're enjoying, and they have great game tables set up, and when you're enjoying a great game and a good beer and a kolache, what more in life do you need? So maybe you don't need to consume anything. But if you need some coffee to take home, let's get them some coffee or some pickles or kolaches to go or something like that.
Sounds good. I like these ideas. All right. So if folks want to learn more about the Neighborhood Revitalization Programs, what's the website?
www.dslbd.gov, that's G-O-V. And then you go to Neighborhood Revitalization Option, and you can learn everything about clean teams, Main Street, and pretty much anything that our team works on.
Great, great. Well, Lauren Atkins and Christine Amoruso from the Department of Small and Local Business Development, thank you both so much for coming in today and chatting with us. It's always good to see you in the neighborhood, and certainly good information today. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll see you at Porch Fest.
Yes, you will. Bye-bye. Okay, it's time to check in with Casey at Good Food Markets. Good morning, Casey. How you doing?
Good morning, Kyle. I'm doing great. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. So spring has sprung again.
Spring has sprung. There's green everywhere. It's fantastic.
Green everywhere, including pollen, which explains my nose right now. So apologies
Feeling
for that.
Feeling a little heavy. Yeah.
Yes, yes. So what is new at the market? I think that I have single-handedly cleaned you out of Luck of the Irish ice cream.
I think you have. yeah, people are super excited about it. We've got a lot of ideas for you for Easter. Admittedly, came up too quickly, like it always does. Holidays seem to not be on our calendars very well here. But in our newsletter this week, we're going to be talking about how you can naturally dye Easter eggs.
Ooh.
Using just things that are in your pantry already, probably ingredients that you'd be using to cook your meals anyway. And at the end of the day, they're a lot more natural than I remember when I would dye eggs as a kid. They'd be those colorful little fizzy tabs, and I don't actually know why they fizzed. It was just water and vinegar, right? So who really knows?
It's magic, Casey. It's
yeah,
magic. Don't question the Easter
kits,
magic.
Right? there's good stencils, and you get your little wax pencil in it, but there are certainly other ways to go about dyeing your eggs than just than those kits. So we have food coloring if you don't want to, you know, boil down some onion peels. But there are really fun ways that you can use things like beets and red cabbage and turmeric to get those nice natural colors into your Easter eggs this year.
A little blueberry juice, maybe.
Yeah. So the purple cabbage and the beets definitely do that nice pink purple color. And depending on how long you want to leave them in you know, you'll get a certain brightness with that.
Great,
so.
Great. Anything new on the prepared food case?
Let's see, what do we have that might be new in the prepared food case?
Some salads, maybe?
Oh, well, actually, so this isn't something that we've made, but Lord of the Pies has just blown up in the store. People love Lord of the Pies, and they're beautiful, very well made. We now have cheesecakes by Lord of the Pies.
Cheesecakes.
Cheesecakes. So those are in the prepared food case right now, and they're new, and while they're not made by Good Food to Go, that would be such a treat. At an Easter brunch, if you wanted to have that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I noticed you had a whole bunch of fresh herbs up by the register yesterday.
Yes, we do. So we have the organic living herbs, and those are grown in Shenandoah in Virginia. And then we will also be having some small seedlings that are coming from Montego Bay. Not Montego Bay, Jamaica. That's the name of the company, Montego Bay. wouldn't be very sustainable to be bringing in seedlings overseas. But we will be having those for gardeners who maybe don't feel comfortable putting seeds directly into the ground. You'll be able to just take these starts and put those in.
Sounds great. Sounds great. All right. So one of my favorite resources there is Leon Bakery.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And I have just discovered the cheddar jalapeno brioche rolls.
I actually have one for breakfast. Not the most healthy breakfast, but it's just so easy. It's a delicious little bun that you can eat as a side to your meal, or you could actually use it for a sandwich. I've seen people make very creative salmon sandwiches with them and doing like chicken salad and tuna salad. And the fun thing with Lion is a lot of people will see them around town. If there's anything that you know that you want, so whatever they make in a bowl or in a roll, we have access to that here at the store. And if you know that you're hosting something like Easter brunch or Passover or anything, and you need a pre-order, I mean, not for Passover, for bread. But if you need an order of, you know, maybe a jalapeno cheddar loaf instead of the rolls, we can bring it in for you.
Great.
Yeah, just have to give us a little bit of notice, but they make the most wonderful, delicious bread. They come super early in the morning, and they have such a great reputation here.
Well, I would also like to remind everybody that's listening that Good Food Market now has some lovely outdoor seating, and as the weather is warming up, that is a great place to grab lunch. You guys have a microwave and all that in the store, right?
So. Yeah, and so the little catch with EBT is that you can't buy hot food, right? But you can buy prepared food that's in a refrigerator, and you can heat it up in the microwave. And we have
great.
No problem with that.
Sounds great.
And we have, you know, since we don't want you to be reheating things in plastic, we can provide you guys with plates and bowls and things like that. And then we've got lots of new fun beverages in the case. The juices are really yummy right now from Misfit. And then, yeah, we have little build-your-own sides. You can get a main, and then you can get a few side items, grab a piece of bread, and then sit on the patio. It's so nice out, you know, before it gets sweltering hot.
Oh, yeah. Well, remind our listeners once again where they can find Good Food Markets.
Yep, so we're at the corner of 20th and Rhode Island. We're at 2006 Rhode Island Avenue Northeast. Our website is goodfoodmarkets.com, and we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, on Instagram, so check out all of our stuff there. And we'll see you in the store on weekdays between 11 a.m. and 9 p.m., and on weekends from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m.
Great. Thanks so much, Casey.
Yeah, thanks, Kyle.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Okay, that's going to wrap up another episode of Rhode Island Avenue Radio. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you Saturday at Porch Fest, and we'll talk to you next week. Take care.